Race is, of course, a national conversation, one that will overlap now with the politics of the 2024 election. In a very provocative moment, candidate Tim Scott, the only black Republican in the U.S. Senate, declared that America is not a racist country.
I think back a couple of years ago when I addressed the nation, and I said, America is not a racist country. We need to stop canceling our founding fathers and start celebrating them for the geniuses that they were.
It's worth noting that 3 years ago today, the black man George Floyd was killed by police officers in Minneapolis. Let's bring in some big political thinkers on this big question. Michael Steele is the first African-American to have headed the Republican National Committee. He's former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, and he's on Skype. Michael, hello.
Hey, what's going on?
And Jamal Simmons is former Communications Director for Vice President Kamala Harris. Jamal, hello to you.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Michael. Good to see you. Good to talk to you.
All right.
America is not a racist country. I'd like your gut reaction to that, not as political professionals or commentators, but as Americans. Michael, first to you.
Well, thank you. First off, that's just not a realistic conversation to have or a comment to make. What I think that sound clip doesn't get to is that two things can be true. And if you don't acknowledge that, yes, America is the land of opportunity, but it also is steeped with repression. You know, you can create opportunity, but my community still redlined. You can create opportunity, but guess what? The public school that my kid goes to doesn't have a good library, doesn't even have computers. And then when you break that down further and say, well, that only is happening in communities that are 70, 80, 90% African-American, and that the white neighborhood across the street has got, you know, not just brand new computers, but, you know, upgrades in their labs and so forth, you begin to get a better picture and understanding of why Americans feel, particularly African-Americans, feel that, yeah, these two things can be true because that's our reality. The opportunity is there. Yes, I can go to a great school if the opportunity lands the right way, but I've still got to go through these hurdles.
Jamal, the reality as you see it.
No, I think Michael hits the nail on the head. It's true. If America were purely a racist country, then Tim Scott wouldn't stand a chance to become president of the United States. But neither would have Barack Obama to become president or Kamala Harris to become vice president. But it's true there's also a lot of racism in America, right? And so we have to talk about the history of racism. We have to talk about the continued presence of racist policies. And then that will give a fuller picture of the America that we're encountering. And we need that fuller picture because if we're going to beat racism, if we're going to have a country that lives up to the ideals, we got to figure out how to attack the real problems that exist so that our kids can have a better future.
Michael Steele, there is, of course, empirical evidence on this question, access to jobs. Both of you have talked about this, to banks, to jobs, to medical care, yawning gap in household income. As far as someone trying to prompt a national conversation or ask something provocative to perhaps bring a useful conversation in this country on race, is Tim Scott a useful interlocutor here?
I think it's more of a complicated interlocutor. Here's the deal. When you go out and you're going to have a conversation on race, that's largely boils down to two things. One thing, the relationship between black folk and white folk. That's it. At the end of the day, this isn't about anything other than 1619 to 2023. You need to be able to carry with you that story of the black experience, the authentic black experience in this country. So if you're going to come out, particularly as an African-American, you got to bring that to the conversation. You can't go out with the pablum of your party, and you can't go out projecting a narrative that is not tied to authentically what that experience is in the face of a Trayvon Martin and George Floyd and all types of other good things that also happen. So if you can't be black first, then when you open your mouth, you're not going to be believable by the people that you're trying to, you know, relate to in one instance, but also tell their story on the, in the other.
You know, Scott, you've got to have this awareness of what's happening around race in order to really be an effective public servant. You know, the example I like to think about a lot is Colin Powell. Colin Powell was obviously the, you know, the first black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's kind of a hero, recently deceased. Colin Powell got to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff because there were people who were in charge of the government who said, you know what, we need to have more African Americans in leadership in the United States military. So we started that during the Carter administration. But then what happens is by the time you get to the Trump administration, there were 41 senior leaders of the United States military, 41 generals, admirals, Coast Guard. There were 41 of them. Only two of them were African American in the Trump administration because it wasn't an issue for Donald Trump. Trump was not, he was race blind. I mean, maybe he was race blind, maybe he was racist. I don't know. People can debate it. But he certainly wasn't race brave, as Melody Hodson likes to say. But if we shut out half of our population, women, African Americans, Latinos, people of color, we are not going to be competitive on a global scale, and we can't afford that.
Two key areas where race will perhaps be a louder part of a national conversation is affirmative action, where the Supreme Court is widely assumed to be planning to overturn it, and access to the ballot box for minority groups. And I wonder if those events, those chapters of the conversation will stoke new ways to talk about race in this country. Jamal, first to you.
We can't ignore it because it's just such, as Michael mentioned a minute ago, it's the fundamental fault line in American society. And what we know is when we attack the black-white divide, it actually benefits everybody else. Right. When after the Civil War, when we passed the amendments to bring African Americans into the country, we actually created space for other people. In the Civil Rights Movement, when we passed the Civil Rights Act, we created space for LGBTQ and women. Who's benefited more from affirmative action than white women? Like, so we have got to make sure that we start out attacking the problem of the black and white problem, and then that gets us to a place where we help everybody else. But the converse is not always true. So we've got to be thinking about this black-white problem in order to make sure America is the place that we want it to be.
Michael?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think it's, I think this is a moment of opportunity and a moment for candidates of not just running at the presidential level, but absolutely closer to the ground where Americans live out their daily lives in communities that are diverse, and but also at the same time contracting, moving away from diversity, to have this conversation about what kind of America we want based on the history that we know, which is why I have such a problem with, you know, the sort of using critical race theory, something that is a high level educational conversation that is not being taught in sixth grade. So we're clear what's not happening out there. But that again speaks to, you know, this idea of using these tools as instruments to bludgeon the conversation and to stoke the fears around race and inclusivity and diversity. America is changing. It is less white today than it was 60 years ago. And that's not a bad thing, folks. It's just the way it is. So how do we embrace that and how do we move and lean into that is the challenge of our time. And I just think our political leadership is woeful in being honest about that and being the standard bearers. Where are the, you know, the Dr. Kings in politics?
And Scott, I know Michael's the Republican on our panel, but I will say it will be helpful for the American political, American, just the consensus of America, if we had two parties that both recognized this was important for us to have an America where everybody gets to participate and bring two different philosophies to attacking this problem, because nobody has 100% good ideas on how to fix it. We really do need to have conservatives in this fight. And it's been one of the most disappointing things since the George Bush administration that we have not had conservatives. George W. Bush, who was, who got this question, right?
He was the last one.
We have not had conservatives on this.
No, I agree. And if I just quick follow up on that is mm-hmm. one of the things that I tried to do as national chairman. One of my first official acts, literally within a week or two of assuming the chairmanship of the party, was to hold a town hall meeting in Harlem on healthcare, on education, on economic development. The blowback I got from within the party was like, well, why are you going to Harlem? I was like, well, that's where the votes are. you can't sit here and say we want black people to vote for us and then not show up.
That's Michael Steele, former head of the Republican National Committee. We've also been talking to Jamal Simmons, former communications director for Vice President Kamala Harris. Thanks to you both. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.